This morning, our guest speaker will discuss what lessons all Americans hope to learn at this juncture when 99 years have passed since Black History Month was first established. In 1916, Carter G. Woodson first championed February as Black History Month, hoping to forge a usable history that could improve the quest for a better and brighter future. Erica J. Ball will speak about lessons of the past and Black History Month in the age of Obama. She is Assistant Professor of American Studies and Chair of African American Studies at Cal State Fullerton, and is the author of To Live an Anti-Slavery Life, Personal Politics and the Antebellum Black Middle Class, published in 2002. She is currently writing a book on popular representations of slavery in the post-World War II era, entitled Slavery in the American Imagination. She is also co-editing with Kelly Carter Jackson a collection of essays on the iconic 1977 television series Roots, entitled Reconsidering Roots and Observations on the 40th Anniversary of a TV miniseries that changed the way we understood American slavery. Despite being that busy, she is coming here and going to speak to us now. Let us welcome Erica Ball.
Thank you. Thank you all so much for inviting me here today to speak with you all. I have to say, I had a bit of a slightly kind of a stressful week, and I was a little cranky, and the last hour that I have spent here with you all has really lifted my spirits. You're wonderful people, so thank you for that. Thank you in advance. I'm done. Right? I'm done. I feel good. I can leave. I also want to thank, it was Liz, I believe, who shared the children's story, because that is really, it's such a beautiful and a fantastic story, I think, and not just for kids, but for all of us, right? There are no mirrors in my Nana's house. There's so much power in that story, because if we imagine what it would be like if we could learn to see ourselves as we appear in the eyes of those who love and care for us, rather than measure ourselves against the standards of those outside our circle of family and friends. We would learn to love ourselves and to value what we have to offer to the world and to share this love with the world rather than spend our lives hobbled by an impoverished view of ourselves or shackled by the stereotypes and judgments of others. So to truly see the beauty of the world, it's a powerful thing. So thank you, Liz, for that. So, here we are in 2015, celebrating Black History Month and President's Day, and this happens to be a year when we're also commemorating a series of momentous and historic events in American history, right? It's the 150th anniversary of the 13th Amendment, which outlawed slavery and ultimately, officially, liberated nearly 4 million enslaved men, women, and children of African descent. It's the 50th anniversary of the famous Selma Civil Rights Campaign, the civil rights campaign that ultimately galvanized the nation's support for the decades-long effort to strike down the state laws and customs that made it virtually impossible for African Americans to exercise their constitutional right to vote. It's the 50th anniversary of the March from Selma to Montgomery, which was, many historians believe, the last great march of the civil rights movement, and the 50th anniversary of the subsequent Voting Rights Act, right, which was signed into law by President Johnson in 1965. So these are all extraordinary milestones, markers, in the long freedom struggle. So this makes Black History Month 2015 unusually significant. And I'm happy to be here to share it with you and to reflect on the significance of the month and these moments in the age of Obama, right? Our new post-racial era. Eyebrows. Okay. So in light of these important, momentous anniversaries, you would think that there would be a great deal of national interest in celebrating these historic achievements in February. But this has not been the case for this Black History Month. The tragic events of the last 2 years, the shooting of Trayvon Martin and the subsequent acquittal of his killer George Zimmerman in 2013, last year's highly publicized trials of Michael Dunn, the 45-year-old man who murdered 17-year-old Jordan Davis at a gas station after an argument over the loudness of his music, the state-sanctioned executions of Eric Garner on Staten Island in New York and Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri, have left an entire generation of young African Americans, Americans as a whole, utterly disillusioned, forced to reckon with the knowledge that despite the election and re-election of a black president, despite the insistence that we now live in this magical post-racial era, despite their own individual achievements, hopes, and dreams, young African Americans suspect that they are not viewed as the legitimate children of the nation, but rather as an undifferentiated, illegitimate mass, as a problem to be ignored, policed, removed, or eliminated by any means necessary. For them, there is no joy in celebrating the many contributions that individual African American inventors, composers, artists, and intellectuals have made to our society and culture. There is no solace in reciting a litany of black firsts, Major League Baseball players, open heart surgeons, astronauts, Supreme Court justices. This approach to Black History Month leaves them cold. Indeed, as Opal Tometi, the 30-year-old co-founder of the Black Lives Matter movement, wrote in a Huffington Post blog a few weeks ago, in a day and age where every 28 hours a black person is being killed with impunity, unemployment in black communities is 12%, and blacks make up 40% of the imprisoned population, we can't afford to solely commemorate the past. We must seize the opportunity to change the course of history by shaping our future. And with that, she announced that this year the Huffington Post would offer a Black Future Month series instead, focusing on 28 different cultural and political issues affecting black lives today, from education to criminal justice reform. And all month long, the essays in the series have consistently argued, we need more than history. We need action. Ms. Tometi is actually not the first African-American to argue that it is time to reinvent Black History Month. Indeed, for the past few years, young African-American bloggers and artists have been promoting this concept of Black Future Month, instead using the month of February to highlight contemporary black artists, pairing profiles, for example, of award-winning young filmmakers today, like Fruitvale Station director Ryan Coogler, with veteran director Stan Lathan, linking street dancers like Bay Area star Ladia Yates with Josephine Baker, the extraordinary international sensation of the 1920s. And now, in the wake of Ferguson, activists like Ms. Tometi have joined this movement, redefining this year's Black History Month as hashtag Black Future Month, for those of you who are on Twitter, hashtag Black Future Month, in an effort to, in their words, envision a future where black lives matter, where black love reigns, and black people are free. So, needless to say, as a scholar who makes the study of the African-American past her life's work, and as someone who is old enough to have the haziest memories of the year when Negro History Week actually became Black History Month, it was back in 1976, by the way, there will be a quiz after this sermon. And as a person of African descent who has fielded more than her share of the question, why do we need a Black History Month? I can't help but view this new trend with great interest. You see, although these young artists and activists may not realize it, they are actually not the first generation of African Americans to suggest that African American history should be understood as first, deeply significant to the experiences of today, and second, bound up with our hopes for a better tomorrow. In fact, for centuries, African Americans have been engaged in the process of forging what scholars call a usable history, a dynamic sense of historical consciousness that demands that we don't just celebrate or commemorate our history, but rather that we employ and deploy our history, using it to engage the political concerns of the present and to highlight the path we should take for a better future. So, now we'll go to the history. Let me give you a few examples of what I mean by this. For instance, if we think about the decades of the 1830s, the 1840s, and the 1850s, leading up to the Civil War, the 250,000 free blacks who lived in the North and signed petitions and wrote narratives and gave speeches and organized an underground railroad and in so many ways dedicated their lives to the movement to abolish Southern slavery. As they did this, they regularly relied upon their knowledge of the past for inspiration and motivation. Over and over again, African Americans like Frederick Douglass and Martin Delaney looked beyond traditional mainstream revolutionary heroes like George Washington and Thomas Jefferson and Patrick Henry to instead form a usable revolutionary history for African Americans to embrace. With this in mind, black abolitionists venerated black Revolutionary War soldiers like James Fortin and celebrated Revolutionary War martyrs like Crispus Attucks and Peter Salem, insisting that the heroism of these figures made these black men, one, co-creators of the nation, right, and two, true freedom fighters, whose example every black abolitionist and every freedom-loving person should now follow until the emancipation of their brothers and sisters in the South was achieved. This tradition of connecting the past with the present and forging a usable history continued into the first decades of the 20th century, when the bright hopes of emancipation were dimmed by the veil of Jim Crow's horrific state-sanctioned violence and legislated economic, political, educational, and public forms of discrimination against black Americans. Even then, in the period that one historian calls the nadir, or low point, of race relations in the United States, African Americans continued to look to the past. Indeed, they highlighted the work of black abolitionists from the previous generation, people like, well, Frederick Douglass and Martin Delaney, right? Using their commitment to the freedom struggle during the previous century as their new guide, using tales of the courage of their 19th century heroes as inspiration as they continued the freedom struggle in the era of Jim Crow. So there's always this reaching back, right? Reaching back and moving forward. It was this very impulse that ultimately motivated Carter G. Woodson 100 years ago back in 1915. The son of former slaves, Carter G. Woodson was born in 1875. He did not begin his formal education until 1895 at the age of 20. And after earning his high school diploma, he went on to earn both a bachelor's and a master's degree from the University of Chicago. And in 1912, he became the second black man to earn a PhD at Harvard University, the first being W.E.B. Du Bois. Taking notes for your quiz. Now, moved to celebrate what was then actually the 50th anniversary of the 13th Amendment to the Constitution and to put forward a much-needed corrective to the historically inaccurate and appalling depictions of African Americans in D.W. Griffith's 1915 blockbuster film, The Birth of a Nation, a film that, for those of you who haven't seen it, celebrated the Ku Klux Klan as dashing heroes who saved the South from the tyranny of African-American voters. Woodson founded the Association for the Study of Negro Life and History. And the following year, in 1916, he began enlisting African-American teachers, students, professors, and amateur historians across the nation, urging them to excavate, preserve, and celebrate a usable history that would inspire and motivate their communities, and to highlight African American historical figures whose actions in pursuit of justice young people in their communities could emulate. This organized campaign ultimately coalesced into the formal celebration of Negro History Week during the second week of February in 1926. And it has been a fixture of African-American public culture and civic life ever since, ultimately moving into the mainstream American consciousness, I would say, in the 1980s and 90s as Black History Month. So, what these examples remind us, I think, is that for men and women of African descent, the past has always been deeply personal, profoundly political, and inextricably bound up with the political realities of the present, as well as our hopes and dreams for a better tomorrow. This sense of what one scholar calls purposeful memory has always encouraged African Americans to look to the future for the fulfillment of hopes that had been anticipated, inspired, and urged on by centuries of sacrifice. And so, here we are today. It's a beautiful morning, almost raining morning, in Fullerton, celebrating Black History Month in the age of Obama. So how can we continue this tradition of connecting Black History Month with Black Future Month? What lessons can we take from the past and deploy for a better future? What is our usable history for today? How can we forge purposeful memories for tomorrow? How can we ensure that our sense of where we are going is positively shaped by our knowledge of where we have been? With these questions in mind, I would like to highlight three aspects of African American history that I believe we should always remember to draw strength from as we navigate today's political crossroads, embrace Black Future Month, and move forward in the hopes of creating a better tomorrow. So first, when we rejoice over our own accomplishments of today, let us always remember to celebrate them as our ancestors did. They never considered these momentous occasions or achievements or victories to be endpoints. Rather, they saw them as turning points. And they continued to believe that the moral arc of the universe would only bend toward justice if they actively embraced each dramatic moment or accomplishment, seized that energy, and placed it in the service to create a better world. So, for example, when African Americans celebrated the Emancipation Proclamation on January 1st in 1863, and rejoiced they did, they also interpreted that proclamation as a call to further action, a call to enlist in the Union Army, a call to build their own institutions, a call to lend a helping hand to their brothers and sisters. With this in mind, Free Black New York City resident Robert Hamilton published an editorial in his weekly Anglo-African newspaper. It's my favorite antebellum Black newspaper name, the Weekly Anglo-African hyphen. Just days after the proclamation, declaring to his African-American readers that, after the feast comes the reckoning. The good things served up to and by our people in the way of hearty and spontaneous rejoicing over the proclamation of freedom should be immediately followed by such practical results as will show that the rejoicing was not a mere outburst of feeling. What therefore the hour demands of us is action, immediate, pressing action. We must fight, fight, fight. It is a fight for freedom, and we are bound to go in. In other words, they were duty-bound to embrace emancipation, the Emancipation Proclamation, as a turning point, to draw strength from it and keep pressing forward in the fight for freedom. Second, Robert Hamilton's words further remind us that African American history exemplifies the power of collectivity and agency. It demonstrates that when people work together, they can create meaningful change, even when faced with the most overwhelming obstacles. We can see this if we take the most well-known moments of the civil rights movement as an example, right? Remember, it was after the entire African-American population of the city of Montgomery, Alabama, spent nearly 2 years, 1955 and 56, boycotting the segregated public transportation system. It was after nine teenagers in Little Rock faced down mobs to integrate Central High School in 1957. It was after four college freshmen decided to create a brand new method of protest, the sit-in, in 1960, inspiring college students all over the South, the Northeast, and yes, even Southern California, to deploy it at segregated restaurants, movie theaters, churches, libraries, you name it, insisting on their right to access public space. It was after thousands of working men and women, college students, high school students, even young children, participated in freedom rides and voting rights campaigns, scores of them dying for the cause of freedom, that Presidents Kennedy and Johnson were moved to introduce the civil rights and voting rights legislation that would ultimately turn the United States toward a new direction in 1964 and 65. By banding together in concert, they forced the leaders of the nation to take notice and ultimately to take a stand on the side of justice. And finally, as these iconic examples from the civil rights movement suggest, African American history is about tenacity, staying power, pressing forward even at the darkest hour, and it is best understood as a very long freedom struggle. The spectacular movements, marches, and watershed moments we like to commemorate never just sprang into being. Rather, each major event was tightly woven into the fabric of a much larger struggle, bound up in the threads spun by the hard work and sacrifices of others. To put it another way, the African-American freedom struggle didn't begin with the civil rights movement of the 1950s and 60s. It stretches back to Sleeping Car Porter and labor activist A. Philip Randolph's campaign to desegregate federal defense industries and the armed forces and his 1941 plans for the original March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom. It stretches back to the turn of the 20th century anti-lynching act activism of Ida B. Wells Barnett and the racial uplift activities of Mary Church Terrell. It stretches back to those millions of African Americans who migrated from the South to the Northeast, Midwest, and California during the first half of the 20th century, searching for a place where they could truly live and flourish as free men and women. It stretches back to the 1870s, that decade immediately after the Civil War, when freedom's first generation established churches and schools and fought to fully embrace all that freedom should offer. It stretches back to the centuries of enslavement that preceded the Civil War and emancipation, when millions of men and women of African descent struggled and resisted and hoped to bequeath a new and better world to their sons and daughters. It is these men and women, their efforts, their successes, their lives, that we commemorate during Black History Month. They truly believed that they could remake the world into one that valued freedom over slavery and promoted the human rights of all over the brute force and privileges of a few. It is the spirit of these men and women, their courage, their hope, and their tenacity that we honor this month. As we honor their memory, we should always remember to do so in a purposeful way. We should be ever mindful of what Emancipation Day orator Charles N. Hunter told a crowd of African Americans on January 1st, 1912. As he put it that day, just over 100 years ago, the past has its lessons, the present has its duties, the future has its rewards. We should always be guided by Martin Luther King's admonition to his listeners 50 years ago at the conclusion of the Selma to Montgomery March. And he wrote, or he said, "The road ahead is not altogether a smooth one. There are no broad highways that lead us easily and inevitably to quick solutions. But we must keep going." So now, more than ever, this history, our shared history, matters. So this morning, February 22nd, 2015, in a moment when we stand at a new political crossroads, wondering what awaits us in the future, let us continue to engage in purposeful memory and draw upon our usable history to take the lessons of the past to heart and to remember that wherever we go together, to always draw strength from where we have been. Thank you.
Okay, we have a few questions.
We don't make much of the fact that our Constitution provided 20 years to import slaves. That's very important to understand, because South Carolina versus Massachusetts and Pennsylvania were locked in a struggle, and that was the only way they could solve it. The other thing is, Paul Robeson was one of your earliest, staunchest members, not quite then.
Yes. Thank you for that.
I want to thank you for your inspiring, brilliant, wonderful talk. And I just want to say that I'm also a historian, and I really appreciate your looking at the inspiration that history brings us, the usable past that we can employ in our life. And it's as much an inspiration for historians in general as it is for African Americans. And I also want to say that as a retired professor during my professional and personal life, I have had contact, even though I don't teach African American history, but I do teach U.S., or I did, with individual students of African American descent, with people I have interviewed of African American descent. True inspiration, such as I have rarely seen elsewhere. So thank you. I do really appreciate it.
Because we are running short on time.
Since we have a president who is equally a white president as he is a black president, do you see the prospect that someday he will just be, or whoever he or she is president, the time will simply be president without regard to what his blood or her bloodlines are?
If I were a more optimistic person, I would say perhaps. Right? But I'm quite a pessimistic person, and I'm also someone who believes that the idea of race, right, and the construction of the divisions created by race, right, and the deep belief that it is biological and transferred from mother to child, right, in some cases, but not all, right? I always ask, can a white woman give birth to a black child? And people are like, yes, of course. Can a black woman give birth to a white child? And my class goes, huh? Ah, right? Because that's how race works, right? It needn't make sense. It's just something we believe, right? So given that this is, it's woven into the fabric of our nation from the beginning, right, from its earliest days, I think unraveling that will be difficult and will take far more years than I have to be alive of.